Professor van Schaick, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you.
In this interview, we want to talk about one of the topics of the IFCC World Lab 2017, which is the clinical implementation of pharmacogenetics. Is it a DNA passport? And our first question, Professor van Schaick, is what is pharmacogenetics?
Well, pharmacogenetics is doing the DNA analysis of an individual, specifically aiming at genetic variations encoding genes which are involved in drug metabolism. So it's DNA analysis to improve drug therapy, in fact.
How is this performed? What techniques are currently used?
So the most of the techniques used in pharmacogenetics is like molecular biology techniques. So this is like used by PCR, and then the detection of specific variants can either be like on the restriction fragment length polymorphism, or it can be by chip analysis, and also by next-gen sequencing that's possible. In our laboratory, we use different microarrays for the detection and also like Tecman analysis.
What would be the role of next-generation sequencing in this?
So the aspect of next-generation sequencing, or the advantage of next-generation sequencing, is that you can do an analysis of the total genome or to sequence all of the information of the drug metabolizing enzymes and transporters. So this is a new upcoming field, which is, I think, very promising. The only drawback at this moment is still that you may acquire information about variants which have not been described or characterized in literature. So this is like the unexpected or the unwanted findings for which it's not clear yet how you could interpret them. So at the moment, we're using most of the certified in vitro diagnostics, so CE-IVD and or FDA-approved tests, which are mostly like microarrays based. But the advantage there is that you only look at variants which occur in the population and from which you know what is the clinical effect. So if you find a variant, then you know how does it affect the enzyme activity and also how you will be able to adjust the dose of a drug which you're prescribing.
And what can you do with the results?
So the results of a pharmacogenetic test, which is in fact like a DNA analysis, will give a prediction on the enzyme activity. The prediction is not 100% because there's also other variations like diet or co-medication that may influence, but it will give you the basic prediction of an enzyme activity. If for genetic reasons you do not have active coding variant, you will have no enzymatic activity. The point what you can do with this information is that you could go to your pharmacist or the prescribing physician, and he can take this information into account when prescribing drugs. And here in the Netherlands, for example, you can go to any pharmacist in the Netherlands, because all the pharmacists here have the information for more than 80 drugs, how they can adjust the dose based on the genetic profile or your DNA passport, which you can present, and give you a dosing which is exactly right for you as a person based on your genetic profile.
And are there guidelines available?
Currently, there are several guidelines. Most of the important are the Clinical Pharmacogenetics Implementation Consortium guidelines. This is a group of individuals, mostly from clinical pharmacology, who are in a very systematic way reviewing their literature and then coming up with dose recommendation and evaluating also the evidence. So this is mostly from the clinical pharmacology view. In the Netherlands, also the Royal Dutch Pharmacogenetics Working Group has, in fact, dosing advice, evidence-based dosing advice, also provided by the clinical pharmacology and hospital pharmacist. If you look at the other side, which you want to have but also present, it's in the clinical guidelines. So in the guidelines, for instance, from the cardiologist, or from the psychiatrist, or an oncologist. And there, I think, is still a bit of a challenge to get it in there. In the Netherlands, we're working at the Dutch guideline from psychiatry, in which now pharmacogenetics will be integrated. On the European level, or in the world level, we are not that far at the moment. So I think there are guidelines, mostly from the clinical pharmacology and hospital pharmacy groups, but we're currently aiming in getting this also in clinical guidelines to get a more clear access, a more clear recommendation in the clinical fields.
What is the role of laboratory medicine in this?
I think the laboratory medicine can play an essential role here. I mean, a lot of the information which is currently upcoming, so how do you do the genotyping, which SNPs do you analyze, what is the translation of finding variants into predicted enzyme activity? I think this is all the work field of laboratory medicine, and I think that especially in pharmacogenetics, it is laboratory medicine who is stimulating the discussion about whether or not to integrate pharmacogenetics in clinical care. So here, it is the laboratory medicine finding a new technique, seeing an application, assembling like evidence, and going into the discussion with the different groups to see how this would fit into the clinic. I think the role of laboratory medicine is essential here because we have the knowledge and we have at this moment the initiative in which we can bring this forward together with, I think, the clinical pharmacologists and the pharmacists.
Are there special quality aspects that should be taken into account?
Well, that's an interesting question about the quality aspects. The discussion which has been ongoing is whether to regard this as a simple laboratory test or that we should have special quality assignment for this. And I think that if you take the example for a cholesterol measurement, if you measure a cholesterol in a patient now and you measure it again in 1 month and there's a difference there, then everybody will claim like, okay, the individual has now a different cholesterol level. Nobody will think of the potential that there would be an error in the laboratory determination. With DNA analysis, this is a little bit different. The test results which I give right now should be valid also in 20, 30, 40 years. And in fact, if you look at the potential consequences, if based on a laboratory finding, a drug therapy is altered, and then in retrospect, it seems that the laboratory result was not right for some reason or another, then you may have an extensive claim for it because this patient may have been on the wrong drug therapy. He could be underdosed, thereby not treating the disease adequately, or he could be overdosed, being exposed to all kinds of toxic side effects. So I think it's very important that from laboratory medicine, more than ever on this particular type of testing, we should think very well on what kind of quality measures we do want to use. And for us, we are an IFCC reference laboratory for pharmacogenetics. We always use two different genetic genotyping platforms to give out our diagnostic results. And the reason for this is that you can have like allelic dropout, that one of the alleles is not amplified. That's probably caused by a variation on the one of the PCR primers. And what we do then, because you use two different techniques, the primers will be in different locations, so you will diminish this risk. And further, of course, the normal laboratory proceedings, like stating, making sure that there is no error in the reporting, there should be a separate individual testing, what is in the system. This is like almost what we all know from laboratory medicine. But I think it's good to realize that the consequences of a wrong call or a wrong genotyping test may have severe consequences. So I think the quality should be just one notch higher than we usually do.
What is the clinical status of pharmacogenetics for clinical implementation?
So currently we are seeing in the last 5 years a shift from a very occasional use of pharmacogenetics to more routine use. In my own laboratory, we did last year something like 7,000 patients we tested for pharmacogenetics, which is quite an increase from the year before, and we're again seeing a lot of more requests this year. What we can see is that people are more aware that this testing is available. They also, when they request the test, they see the value. And I think that worldwide, you can see a big uptake in where there's a lot of emphasis in how we can use it in clinical implementation and where it's actually already clinically implemented. For instance, the DPYD test for the use of capecitabine is now generally accepted in the Netherlands as a test that you should do before you prescribe the drug, so before starting the therapy. So this has moved in the last 2-3 years from like more we should investigate whether we should do this or not to a situation in where it's routinely requested. So depending a little bit on the drug-gene combination, we see more and more implementation and uptake of pharmacogenetic testing in clinical practice.
You mentioned DNA passport in the title of your talk. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yes, that's what we see in the test request. At first, people said, okay, we're going to prescribe this one particular drug, so we should analyze this one or two enzymes. Then we saw a shift, because if you look at one specific drug used for to treat depression, you may ask for one or two enzymes. But if you want, based on your test result, perhaps choose for another drug for treating depression, this may be metabolized with just a little different enzyme. So you can define specific panels. So a couple of three or four enzymes specifically for mental health or in psychiatry. If a patient in cardiology, we can define three or more enzymes which you should test to cover all the drugs which are used in cardiology, and the same for in oncology. And one step even further is, why not do this testing even broader? We can define six or seven enzymes, which I think you should test because there's a lot of variation in there, and that the risk is that you may be exposed to one of the drugs which is metabolized by one of these enzymes is something like 80%. So six or seven enzymes would give you a very good estimation for how to use drugs in your future life. And this is what I define as a DNA passport. It's a DNA passport for medication. It's in fact six or seven genes, which I think are generally applicable, that you should have knowledge about when you're going through life, because there's a high risk you will get drugs that are metabolized by one of these enzymes.
When should we use pharmacogenetic testing, in your opinion? Should it be used if there are problems with medication or at the start of drug therapy? Or should it be something to test directly after being born?
Oh, well, this is a very challenging question as well. Currently, I think that I would like us to move to the point where for specific drugs, you can see that there's a large influence of a pharmacogenetic variation. So actually there, I would say, if you start the therapy, you should consider the pharmacogenetic testing. So coupled to the therapy. So if you're on antidepressants, I would advise testing for CYP2D6 and CYP2C19 directly. If you want a little bit moderate one, you can say, okay, you start first on one drug, and if it doesn't help, you do the testing then. But I think we have the knowledge, we have the tools to use it as soon as we start testing. Like I said, for capecitabine, everybody now in Netherlands already tests for DPYD. If you're prescribed abacavir, everybody tests for HLA-B5701. But for the cytochromes, I think we're still on the point. And I think that if we are going to prescribe like one of the 60 drugs, which is metabolized 2D6, and for which you have dosing advice, I think we should test the 2D6 beforehand. But actually, as we talked in the previous question about the DNA passport, why wait until you start with the therapy? Why not already have that information present? Because there's, like I said, a very high chance you may be exposed to one of the drugs which are being metabolized by a genetic polymorphic enzyme. And then you get into the issue, well, why shouldn't you, as soon as you are born, do this test? And of course, there are ethical reasons why you may not want to do that. And one of the points usually mentioned in genetics, in clinical genetics, is that you should, as an individual, have the right to decide what kind of genetic information you want to receive or not. And they usually wait until the age of 18. Against that, you could argue that also as a child, you will be exposed to several drugs. And part of these drugs will be metabolized by genetic polymorphic enzymes. So in that reason, you could say, perhaps it's not ethical to withhold this information, and should indeed, as soon as an individual is being born, should the information be available, what is the drug metabolizing capacity? So that's the challenge. That would be my view for the future, that we should have that discussion. And I think there are arguments to have this genetic information, this pharmacogenetic information, as soon as possible in life to have all the benefits which this knowledge brings you.
What is your vision on pharmacogenetics in the coming 5 years?
For the next 5 years, I hope to see an increase in pharmacogenetic testing, an increase in the use in the preemptive genotyping, so genotyping before you're starting the therapy. And like I said, and that probably not in 5 years, but at least to have the discussion whether we should not provide a pharmacogenetic passport or DNA profile, pharmacogenetic profile DNA passport already at birth. So that's at least to have it implemented, to have a preemptive genotyping there, and to have made some progress in the discussion whether we should use this as soon as people are being born. If I may add to that, My vision, my belief would be that we should not be prescribing drugs without having a DNA passport for medication.
Thank you very much, Professor van Schaick. It's been a pleasure to have you in Microscopio.
Okay, it was a pleasure for me as well. Thank you very much for your questions.